Thank you, Don.
My pleasure.
Fleet Foxes to start the show. Fleet Foxes at Pitchfork this weekend, and some pretty big names too. Griffin's going to go check out Pitchfork this weekend as well. The summer music festival season is underway. Sorry about the weather for everybody. I'm just watching these empty river boats that do the tours, the architecture boat tour, and the rest of them. Down below, we're on the 18th floor, and we watch them go back and forth full of customers. Ain't no cash pan customers on the boats this morning. They may get some business, but you see a day like this when it hits in the middle of summer, and you think of all of the opportunities and money lost, right? Cubs have a doubleheader today, right, Joe? And I suppose they're going to do everything they can to play. They got to get 5 games in this series to make up for 1 rainout already.
I know. It was originally supposed to be a 3-game series after the All-Star break. It turns into a 5-game set, and I know the tarp's on right now. It's going to be tough.
Tough to get that one. And although I don't wish the Cubs any ill will, but how much fun is it to watch position players throw?
It is fun. It's like watching a dog walk on its hind legs.
It kind of is. Because, you know, if I may just follow through with that analogy, it's like, this isn't that important. I mean, you know you want the Cubs to win, but when you're that far behind, what was the final score, like 30 to nothing?
18 to 5. You're actually bringing it down from what Lou thought. It was 200 to something.
It wasn't that bad. We only lost 30 to nothing. So if you're going to lose 18 to 5, you might as well make it entertaining. We got a 162-game season. We'll be fine. Let's let the dog walk on its legs. Come on, Ian Happ. Let's go. Let's go.
So, first time since 1977, I think, they had 3 position players take the mound.
You worry if they start one of them, but if, you know, if you're getting blown out, we're good. This is just fun. In fact, they should announce over the PA when they're down more than 10. Attention, Cub fans. Soon, please don't leave. Soon, Ian Happ will take the mound. And then the managers, Mrs. Madden, will actually throw a few or whatever. You know, they'll just make it entertaining.
That would definitely get people to stay, I think.
It'll be tough to get in 2 games today. I have a buddy who came in from Minnesota, and he had 2 things on his agenda. One was to see Hamilton last night. My advice to him, as it is to you, is lower your expectations. It's a really good musical. But I'm telling you, no musical can be as good as you've been told it is. And then he was going to go check out the Cubs. He's got tickets to game 1, and that's the one he figured they'd get in. They might not get in 2 today. So good luck to the Cubs. You doing play-by-play, the Kane County Cougars later on?
Yeah, we're actually we're hosting the South Bend Cubs are coming to town this weekend.
And then, of course, Pitchfork is this weekend. Griff, you're going to check that out. And my guess is that this is the, you know, attitude that those of us who've never been to Pitchfork have. Those kids don't care. It can rain. It'll be muddy. It'll be sloshy. They don't care. They're good. That's what those music festivals are like.
I don't know. I think it's a little, maybe that's Lollapalooza. That's the one that all the high schoolers go to, I feel like. Oh. And they're like there for it no matter what.
Yeah.
I came into a free ticket very recently. I wasn't planning on going. And
you don't want to use it now, do you, if it's going to rain on you all day?
No, I'm going to go, but I don't have the attitude that you just prescribed me of, you know what, let's do it. No. Like, no. If the weather's bad, I'll go, but I'll be crappy about it.
I don't.
There was a time where I had, but that time has come and gone. I feel like the attendance is a little more grown at Pitchfork and a little more like, I want to have pleasant scenery and all the rest. I don't know.
But this is where Lauryn Hill's going to be, right?
Yes, yeah.
That's a big deal, right?
It's going to be Chaka Khan and then Lauryn Hill to close out the festival. That's going to be incredible.
Is that a weird juxtaposition, the two of them?
No, I think it's perfect. Yeah. It'd be great.
Yeah. And then we just play little Fleet Foxes. They're going to be there.
They're headlining tonight.
Yeah. I love Fleet Foxes. Do they always sound like that, by the way? I've only listened to one of their albums.
That's their first one, and it's been a long time since then. They've only done 2 since that, but they've kind of grown a little bit. It's a little more dense and hard to dig into these days. I feel like they're interested in challenging listeners more.
Hey, speaking of challenging listeners more, so Mamma Mia 2 opens up this weekend, and I was watching the reviews come in because I wanted to see what people thought of Mamma Mia 2. I saw Mamma Mia 1 because I'm married, but I don't know that I want to see Mamma Mia 2. Now I'm reading it and thinking about it, and I thought, oh, maybe I will. It's a rainy, gray weekend, and I've thought enough big thoughts this weekend. Maybe Mamma Mia 2 is just what America needs right now. No heavy lifting there, eh, gang? So I'm looking at the Rotten Tomatoes review. There's a story about it at CNN. Forbes is writing about it as well. It said, everyone looks to be having a grand time, this from CNN.com, no matter how sizable the role is, which proves rather infectious. Mamma Mia, here we go again, is not a great movie, but it's a warm, occasionally stirring dip back into the jukebox and carefree escape into its pristine waters. Okay. Forbes said, if you look at the tomato meter over at Rotten Tomatoes, the sequel has earned a solid 79% fresh grade. Comparatively, the original 2008 smash earned a 54% fresh grade. I'm surprised that Mamma Mia got that bad a score on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know that system that well, but that sounds like not a great review. I know the movie
was an aggregation.
Go ahead. Jump in there.
Rotten Tomatoes takes every movie critic's review and puts them all together. Okay. So that they got 78% good reviews.
Yeah.
It doesn't take into account any editorial voice from the site itself. It's all about what people at other papers and publications said.
Yeah. So 78 is pretty good then, right?
That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah. 54, not as good, eh, Griff?
That's absolutely right.
But with that being a smaller number and all?
Yeah.
So is the new movie, asked Forbes, significantly better than the original, or are there cultural reasons why the sequel is being better reviewed? You know, maybe right now we just go, oh, thank you, hello, and it just feels better, even though it probably isn't better, right? Meryl Streep is still in it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, I don't know, but I'm thinking I'm going to go ahead and My Brenda is probably listening to this right now a little slack-jawed because she's thinking, really? You want to go see Mamma Mia 2? And I watched the trailer, and it looks like fun. And then I saw this, too. Okay, so here is the review of Mamma Mia 2 from The Onion. This is the review of Mamma Mia 2 in part from The Onion. From The Onion, but this is actually a credible review of the movie because it speaks to, I think, the attitude a lot of us have about movies like this. And it's an invitation to allow your heart and soul. It's an invitation to allow you to enjoy Mamma Mia 2.
This is Peter Rosenthal, head film critic for The Onion. Today, I'll be discussing Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, a sequel to the 2008 jukebox musical Mamma Mia, and a film which you can either choose to enjoy for the perfectly fine piece of entertainment it is, or live out the rest of your existence as a miserable killjoy who slogs through life, recoiling at anything remotely joyful or upbeat in the world. Your choice. The new Mamma Mia begins 10 years after the original, with protagonist Sophie Sheridan seeking guidance about her mother's past through a series of colorful dance sequences and musical numbers that you can either accept at face value or treat like they're some sort of artistic plague representing everything wrong with existence. And that's probably what you'll do, right? Because this is who you've chosen to be. Look, this film isn't striving to be anything more than what it is. 120 minutes of big-name actors letting loose, scored by some delightful Swedish pop gems. So how about keeping your world-weary critique to yourself? In fact, maybe if you drop the holier-than-thou attitude and loosen up for a second, you could actually enjoy Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. But this isn't about Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. It never was. This is about you. Somewhere along the way, you changed. You were sapped of your childlike capacity for wonder and withered into the husk of a person you've become. A cold, dead-eyed automaton forever wagging its finger in the face of those who just want to sit in a cool, dark movie theater. Seriously, ask yourself, does it feel good to trudge through life like this? You realize this is why people don't like you, right? That every time you criticize a perfectly fine piece of pop culture, you drive your friends just a little bit farther away? Keep it up. And eventually you'll be all alone, stewing in your own hatred and bile. And you know who you're going to turn all that bitterness and resentment on then?
No.
Yourself.
Oh, my goodness.
There's the review from The Onion. So, shame on you if you don't like that movie, huh, Griff?
Yeah, and you can find that on The Onion's website for an extended, unedited version.
Yeah, we edited it for time and for content.
Yep.
But you'll get the idea. Hey, by the way, when I was asking Lou Manfredini who your teen crush was, that is, there you were, a kid, maybe in grade school, maybe it was your first memory of warming to somebody. Who was that? I want you to text to me. Joe, text to me, or you can actually turn your microphone on. Who was that first pop star, TV star, movie star that you went, oh my, I feel something? Who was that for you, Joe?
Everyone else was on the Britney Spears train, but I always adored Mandy Moore.
Mandy Moore, nice. Griff, I don't think I've ever publicly asked you this question. Is there somebody?
Yeah, probably. I need to think about it. Let's come back to it.
All right. Griff's always trying to steer the ship along here and keep it on time. But somehow it came up this week, your celebrity crush. That first time you went, oh, hello, I'm feeling something. Who was that? For Joe, it was Mandy Moore. For Violetta Podramedic, who joined us during the week, she said it was Apollo Ono. Everybody gets to have one. Griff, do you have one that automatically comes to mind? If you have to work at it too hard, maybe the answer is no, but maybe not.
I'm thinking John Denver, Sean Cassidy. Oh, no, these are texts we're getting. I'm sorry, that's not actually.
I was going to say, I didn't know that you were a big fan of John Denver as a child, but again, we don't judge here.
Dreamy Donny Osmond.
Yeah, Donnie was it for a lot of ladies.
From 847. Ron Santo. That's interesting. I like that.
Well,
Paul Newman.
Why not?
Yeah.
I would say for me, Lou Manfredini said Susan Day from the Partridge Family. And, you know, everybody is of a generation, so you'll sort of announce your age as you do this, but that's fine. Susan Day, and Susan Day sure worked for me when I was a kid. You know, the seminal sort of A or B for a lot of men was Ginger or Marianne. And again, if you were of an age where you were young and Gilligan's Island was a hot show, I was a Marianne guy. Of course, Ginger was the sexy starlet, but she was more woman than I knew I could handle. So I thought Marianne seemed to be approachable. She was beautiful. We'd get along.
The texts are pouring in.
And then, of course, Judy Jetson worked for me as well. The texts include what, Griff? What are you looking at?
Elizabeth Montgomery from Bewitched.
Oh, gosh, yes! Yes, thank you, whoever said that.
All right, calm down.
Oh, my God, I cannot. I'm in third grade, and she's on TV, and she's black and white, and she's gorgeous, and she wrinkles her nose.
Another vote for Donny Osmond. Ricky Nelson.
Yeah.
I'm saying names I don't know.
Yeah, trust me, we do.
I know. David McCollum.
Yeah.
From Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Man from U.N.C.L.E., sure.
Bobby V.
Right.
Susan Day.
Right.
Yeah. Sean Cassidy again. Bobby Sherman.
For some of us, these names are in color, and for some of us, they're in black and white.
Olivia Newton-John.
Oh, yeah, right.
Michael Landon from Bonanza.
Yeah, why not? Them are some good-looking cowboys there on the Ponderosa.
Who was the lady from I Dream of Jeannie?
That was, she was gorgeous too. And that was a big deal because I'll catch her name here in a second. It was, Griff, are you Googling that? I Dream of Jeannie with, oh Lordy. Because you got to see her navel. That was a big deal. The amount of flesh that you saw on Jeannie was...
It's on Sam Stevens, isn't it?
Was a big deal.
Barbara Eden?
Barbara Eden, yeah. Yeah, Samantha Stevens was
Bewitched.
Sam!
We got multiple votes for members of the Monkees as well, Davy Jones.
Oh, yeah, right.
But the Monkees notably doing better than the Beatles in this informal poll.
Well, it's early.
It's early. Got a bunch of Davy Jones women now.
312-981-7200, your first celebrity crush as a child. Only one of them animated. I was going to put... Betty Rubble in there, too. But then I thought, well, if I'm going to go down that path, I'll just stop at Judy Jetson and I'm done.
Yeah, you don't want to open up the Disney Princess Pandora box there.
Well, if we're going to cartoons, Lola Bunny's got to be in there.
Jessica Rabbit.
We can go, I know, really. Jessica's cheating. That's not
it
even
is.
Fair.
It is cheating.
And when Jessica Rabbit came along, I was, you know, 37 years old, so it was a little old for me to be pining for something that's a cartoon. Okay. Thank you, Don.
Oh, yeah.
This thing up, but I've got Samantha Stevens, that's Elizabeth Montgomery, on my mind, and we've been talking about your childhood celebrity crush. To review, Mandy Moore for Joe Brand. Don, did you chime in? Who is it going to be? You didn't say.
I would have to say Jennifer Lopez, actually.
Excellent choice. There's no wrong answers here. Griffin has yet to find that place in his youth that mattered the most to him.
It was a Disney Channel star for sure. Possibly Hilary Duff, maybe Christy Carlson Romano from Even Stevens.
Right. I'm thinking of, who was it? Valerie on Room 222. A couple of you said the cast from Bonanza. I was going to come out with that. That was a wonderful, beefy, happy family show. It was probably worked for a lot of people. Alita wanted to say what? Alita, no, pardon me, we'll get to Alita. We'll start with line one, though. Kathy, you're on WGN. Who did you want to say?
Oh, well, yeah, now you bring up Michael Landon, and of course, oh my gosh, Little Joe. And then there was also Tony Dow on Leave It to Beaver. But Paul McCartney, for sure. I knew every fact about him. You know, I mean, that, I would say, was my first major, major crush. Then I moved on to other things like Richard Gere, the Nasty Boy. Yeah.
That's what we do. That's what we do. Okay, Kathy, thanks for the call. From you to Eddie, you're on WGN, or is it Edie? E-D-D-I-E.
Yes.
Ed, you're on the air. Hey, what's up?
Nothing. I just want to let you know about the great Barbara Eden. What about? She was mine. My crush. Yeah. Still is.
Yeah, no kidding.
After all these years.
It takes us back a little bit. Thanks for the call. From Eddie to finally Alita. Hi, Alita. This is John. You're on the air. Hi, Alita. How are you?
I'm fine, John. Thanks for holding up for me. My favorite was Rex Allen. And I don't know if anybody will remember because I'm in my 80s, but he was on the Barn Dance, and he played the guitar. And I don't know if he's still alive or not, but he was a good singer, and he was so handsome. Then I went from Rex Allen to Barry Como in high school. And, of course, after high school, then there was Frank Sinatra. So I just kind of, the singers, I guess, were the ones that wooed me.
It takes us back to our youth. I appreciate you listening and calling, Alita. Thanks. You can text to 312-981-7202. The Mincing Rascals come your way after the 11 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News, our weekly roundtable. The gang is talking about this strange week that was. Seems like we say that about every week. The president's tweet, by the way, this morning made me laugh, and I don't know if you heard it or saw it. Don mentioned it in the news a moment ago. Here it is. President has so many things on his mind, but here are his last two tweets. These are the last two tweets of the President of the United States. Number one, inconceivable that the government would break into a lawyer's office early in the morning, in parentheses, almost unheard of. Even inconceivable that a lawyer would tape a client, totally unheard of and perhaps illegal. The good news is that your favorite president did nothing wrong! Exclamation point. Okay, I laughed when he said that. If for the first time, Donald Trump made me smile. Your favorite president did nothing wrong. And by the way, when you tweet or look into the television cameras and say, I think it's important that you know that your president is not a crook, that usually means they're a crook. But that's okay. That was the president's tweet today. And then the tweet before that, this is also today. And I think the president gets bored. His attention span flits from one thing to the next. And so he tweeted out, the NFL anthem debate. The NFL national anthem debate is alive and well again. Can't believe it. Isn't it in contract that players must stand at attention, hand on heart? The $40 million commissioner must now make a stand. First time kneeling, out for the game. Second time kneeling, out for the season, slash no pay. Okay, here comes the NFL. Here comes another season. And it sounds like we are not going to be spared the anguish, game in and game out, player in and player out, of what that's all about. Joe, just to be clear about this, I didn't ask you about this off the air. You may not have the answer off the top of your head. But is it clear how these fines or penalties will be handed out to players who don't comply?
The original ruling, I'm not quite sure the exact semantics of it. But I'm pretty sure it was fairly a gray area, and that's why.
I thought it was up to the teams. I mean, the rule is that you do have to stand at attention.
Right.
There's no kneeling.
Nothing to disgrace the flag, I think, was the official wording. So, you know, what if they turned around or something? Then they could technically use that as going against what the rules they had placed in. So then the player gets a fine.
A fine, right. But does the player get a fine? Does the team get a fine? Is it a penalty that's extracted upon them on the field, like you have to kick off 10 yards deeper, or is it just monetary after the game?
I do remember the team would be the place in order to receive the fine, because
right.
Then I think the New York Jets were offering to pay any of those fines that the players would have made happen to the organization. But, you know, back when it all happened, they said it was a unanimous decision that every team was in agreement, which that turned out to be false. So, what, you know, why would the New York Jets say, okay, we agree with this, but we'll pay for any fine? I mean, that's just wasting money on their point, just making the whole thing look like it was totally made up.
Well, the president is chiming in. So the first time you kneel, you're out for the game. Good luck. Really? So the official's going to come over and throw a flag? Or the coach or the manager is going to say, hey, Joe is on a knee over there, or he's disrespecting the national anthem. We're going to take him out of the lineup? Really? You want the Bears to do that? I don't want to have this conversation. But if my guy's out on the field and he can play, and he does something like that, I'm not sure that I want my coach to take my guy out of the game because the president is not happy about this. Anyway, first time kneeling, out of the game. Second time you kneel, you're out for the season with no pay. I'm not sure the contract even allows for that. I'm not sure that you can do that. But that's Donald Trump's second tweet for you today.
Not only that, I mean, you've got players that are being accused and found guilty of sexual assault and domestic abuse. And
how about where they punched their girlfriend in the stairwell?
And what's the fine and what's the suspension for that? 3 or 4 games. So how can you say a peaceful protest is more important than actual violence?
Exactly. Greg Hardy of the Cowboys is notorious for off-the-field domestic violence stuff, and he has been welcomed back to the Cowboys with no apparent punishment.
My attitude about all of these is that you are a company who can employ the people you want, and if they have a criminal record or if they've done things to embarrass the organization, that's upon you, right? So if you don't want to hire that guy, if you want to fire that guy, that's up to you. But I don't know that it's the place of the president or you or me or anybody else to make the decisions for those teams. And if the team says, well, we want to hire this guy, and then people don't buy tickets because they don't like that team, that's on them as well. I'm not an apologist for bad behavior. If I was the manager of a team and my player assaulted his girlfriend like that, he's not on my team anymore. But I'll make that decision. And I think you're right, Joe. I think those are two entirely different kinds of crimes. And boy, if we're going to line them up, we better get the penalties appropriate. That's for sure. It's 10:46. There's a book out, and I don't know if you are into dinosaurs. I kind of am, just because I'm interested in the world. But the new book that is on the New York Times bestseller list, and get a load of this, it's one of the few books on the New York Times bestseller list right now that isn't about politics, I'm not making that up, is The Rise and the Fall of the Dinosaurs. And it's written by a young man from Ottawa, Illinois, who grew up on the banks of the Fox River. And the book is called The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs. His name is Stephen Brusati. And he came into our studio a couple of days ago to tell us a little bit about it. It is fascinating. The Washington Post calls it scintillating. And it's because he's smart. He doesn't get real wonky. He doesn't get too scientific, though there's good science here. He's a paleontologist at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. So he's very smart. University of Chicago kid. But he makes it thrilling, particularly when he got to one point in the book. And that had everybody in the studio almost nervous. Okay, so here's part of that conversation we had, I think it was yesterday, the day before, with Ottawa's very own Steve Brusati. He is the paleontologist from the University of Chicago who wrote the book The Rise and the Fall of the Dinosaurs. And we talked to him about, among other things, the day the dinosaurs died.
The story that I try to tell is that story of dinosaur history, that full story from the origin story, like we just talked about, those first humble dinosaurs emerging on that supercontinent, and then telling that tale of how they spread around the world and how some of them became the size of jumbo jets and how other ones became T-Rexes and other ones turned into birds, and then how the rest of them died.
So what would have happened if the meteor never hit the Earth?
I was scaring everybody because I was reading from your book about the day. What did you call it? The worst day in Earth's history? Here it is. Yep. It was the worst day in the history of our planet. A few hours of unimaginable violence that undid more than 150 million years of evolution. Wow. Okay, that's one way to put it. And then you go on to describe what that was like. The glass raining from the sky, the incredible heat and stuff like that.
I think we can let our imaginations run wild, and it's a whole lot of fun. It's
would like, we have evolved?
Probably not, because the very first mammals got started right alongside the very first dinosaurs back on that supercontinent more than 230 million years ago. But those groups went their separate ways. Dinosaurs spread around the world. They became huge. They became dominant. Mammals stayed in the shadows. Mammals remained small, and they were good at being small. But then when the dinosaurs died out, when that asteroid came down and caused that worst day in the history of Earth, then the mammals almost immediately took over from the dinosaurs. They were able to survive, and within most a few tens or hundreds of thousands of years, you have mammals that are the size of cows, mammals the size of giraffes, saber-toothed flesh eaters, burrowing mammals, tree-climbing mammals, even the very first primate. So it looks like that asteroid knocking off the dinosaurs was the trigger that allowed our ancestors to stake their claim.
But why would our ancestors survive and the dinosaurs, the most powerful, not?
This is one of the lessons of these big extinction events where climates and environments change really quickly. And there's a few of these in the history of life, and fossils are the evidence that tell us about these things. And what we often see is that when there is really sudden change, those animals that are the dominant ones, the ones that are at the top of the food chain, the ones that are the most successful, they often die out because they are well adapted to a certain world, a certain type of climate, and then they can't cope when things change. And oftentimes it's the small animals, the ones that can hide, that can burrow, that can fly, the ones that can eat lots of different types of foods, you know, the subway rats, the cockroaches, the pigeons,
yeah.
Those kind of animals have a better chance to make it through, and then they might take over the world afterwards.
So describe the violence on Earth when the asteroid hit.
This probably was, without hyperbole, the worst day in the history of Earth, because what happened that day was a 6-mile-wide asteroid fell out of the sky, and this was a rock that was traveling faster than a speeding bullet. It smashed into the Earth with the force of over 1 billion nuclear bombs, and it punched a hole in the crust that was over 100 miles wide, and that left a crater that is down in Mexico near Cancun. That's where the crater is. Most of it is covered with water, so you can't see it. When that asteroid hit the Earth and made that crater and released all that energy, it unleashed instantaneously a cascade of wildfires, of tsunamis, of earthquakes, of hurricane force winds, of dust being shot up into the atmosphere.
You said the winds hit 600 miles an hour.
Yeah, more severe, nastier than really any hurricane humans have ever experienced. And the earthquakes would have been worse than any humans have ever experienced. So this was a terrible day, but it wasn't a normal day. This was the biggest asteroid that's hit the Earth in the last 500 million years at least. So we shouldn't be worried that this is going to happen tomorrow.
Okay, because Elif has this question. Go ahead, Elif.
I was just about to ask, what are the chances of us facing the same...
I've got everybody paranoid around here because I've been describing the worst day, and even the second worst day would be a bad day if something like this happened. And frankly, I do lose sleep at night going, all we got right now is Bruce Willis and Ben Ben Affleck to save us. We've got no hope that of another one of these. I mean, really, you think, oh, no, that's a phenomena exclusive to the time of the dinosaurs. But it's not timed that way. Those are independent events. An asteroid could hit the Earth today when we have Starbucks. Am I right?
It could.
Oh, I cut it there, didn't I? It's kind of an abrupt ending. But he said it could, but it probably won't. Still, what an interesting book and what an enthusiastic guest, huh? Here's a factoid that he left us with, and then I'll leave you for the news. But he said, I asked him, that scene we have in our mind of a Stegosaurus and a Triceratops and a Brontosaurus and T-Rex and all of those dinosaurs all milling about the jungle at the same time. Did that scene happen? And he said, largely it did. A lot of those dinosaurs, the big ones, the famous ones, did coexist, but not all of them. In fact, he said, you and I today, on a timeline, are closer to Tyrannosaurus Rex than T-Rex was to the Brontosaurus. The Brontosaurus was the, you know, the dinosaur that Fred Flintstone used. Those did not live at the same time. We live closer in time to T-Rex than T-Rex did to Brontosaurus. I don't know what you're going to do with that, but now you... Thank you, Don. We're featuring some of the music from Pitchfork this weekend. What are we listening to here, Griffman?
Kalayla.
I knew that.
She'll be performing at 7:45 tonight.
We'll do our Vibe Score segment in about a half an hour, and you'll bounce out with another song for us. We'll talk about that and some other topics that are in the news. This is where we normally play back part of our Mincing Rascals podcast that we like to broadcast on Saturdays. The Mincing Rascals was judged this year the best podcast in Chicago. It features Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio News. And today, Patty Vasquez, one of our show hosts, chimes in, as she often does. Sometimes you'll hear Justin Kaufman, who works with Steve Cochran in the morning. And then from the Chicago Tribune, we always invite Eric Zorn, who couldn't make it this time, and Krista McQuarrie. But there's Scott Stantis, the conservative political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. We were all sitting around talking about the weird week that this was for the president. So the podcast broadcast starts this way. We appreciate your tuning in. And look who just strolled in.
Sorry about that. I'm Patty Vasquez, and I host the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darles Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., unless the White Sox are playing.
Mr. Zorn can't join us today. It is here where he normally inserts something that is irrelevant or irreverent, and then we go there.
I did bring one of his columns to read, though.
But let's start here. There is a horse in the hospital.
To me, it's like... it's like there's a horse loose in a hospital. I think everything's going to be okay, but I have no idea what's going to happen next. And like none of you know either. Like we've all never not known together.
John Mulaney famously said, whatever it is about Donald Trump's presidency, you've never seen anything like it. It's a horse in a hospital.
Does everybody get that reference? Or it was, he was on Colbert's show and he made that joke, which is very funny. It was weird that you, because it was from a while ago.
Yeah.
And but it stuck with you, didn't it?
It
was impactful.
And every now and then there's a moment where somebody in my family will go horse in a hospital. And
it's,
we had the horse.
Scott's very confused.
Yeah, sorry.
That's how crazy this presidency is.
Oh, okay.
Northwestern Hospital, you're in the emergency room and a horse runs by and everyone acts like it's normal. Like that should be happening.
President Trump and President Putin are there in Helsinki. They give a joint press conference where the president is very deferential to the president of Russia.
I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful.
And then afterwards, to correct it, he said, well...
In a key sentence in my remarks, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't or why it wouldn't be Russia.
Did his patch help or hurt his cause this week?
Well, I hope it hurt. I mean, I hope it didn't help because,
It was an unbelievable patch. And the same thing the day after that, when he was asked if Russia is still meddling, and he answered a reporter, said no.
Twice he said no.
And then Sarah Sanders came out, and I'm sorry, I believe she lied again, saying that the president was really saying no questions. This happened during your show, and we talked about how I was trying to get the audio. I guess he didn't really speak it as much as he mouthed it, and I finally did see the video, and it's clear he's looking at the reporter who asked the question, and he's saying no, no.
Right. If you're not going to answer questions, it's just a general no to the entire group of reporters. It's not.
So, in answer to your question, if these patches helped, we're in the bad shape.
Yeah, there's no patch. There's no patch big enough for this. He stood next to the head of Russia and was asked point blank, "Who do you trust? Your own intelligence officers in your own intelligence community, or this guy?" And Trump looks and says, "This guy." I mean, this is so close to treason. I'm beside myself.
You know, I don't think calling it treason or saying now we ought to impeach him, which our own congressman did, helps.
And that's interesting because in particular, my conservative friends were on social media were like, it's fun watching libtards misunderstand what treason means. But treason can mean turning your back on a belief system and completely. I looked it up. The crime of betraying one's country, especially by attempting to kill the sovereign or overthrow the government, but it's also the action of betraying someone or something. So it's a betrayal. It is a public and international betrayal of our country.
I see treason metaphorically, but I don't see it literally. And I think the mistake...
It is literally.
I think it was literal treason, but I don't think it was prosecutable treason.
Well, maybe that's the point I'm trying to make. If your end game, Scott, is to get Donald Trump out of office or to minimize his power, pick your spots. Because if you're going to say treason, or if you're going to say, okay, impeach him now, and nothing happens, then you're losing. He's mounting up victories. That becomes momentum for him. I don't think what happened on the lawn in Helsinki was as bizarre, was as unfortunate as the next day lying about would versus wouldn't. I mean, that was juvenile. That was them sitting in a room going, what are we going to do? And someone goes, I know, we'll say we meant to say wouldn't, and then this will go away.
Well, juvenile and this administration go hand in hand now. I mean, do you remember, and I'm going to give away my cartoon, Ed, which is, remember when we all lost our mind over, that depends on the definition of the word.
It is. Right?
This is supporting a sworn enemy who wants to diminish and demolish our institutions.
Well,
this guy's down with that.
I don't want to make too much of the treason thing because it's not prosecutable and maybe it is opinion, but what the president did was undermine the U.S. government intelligence to the benefit of an adversary who was standing beside him. I mean, that
yes.
I think was pretty widely agreed upon. That's what he did in Helsinki.
They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia.
I also think it's the fact that he combines collusion with meddling. That's the thing. He just hears them as the same thing. He's not able to peel that out.
I think that's a big point, Patty. I think those are different things. They are different things,
but he doesn't hear it that way.
Can you imagine, though, being the Americans who Donald Trump would sell out in exchange for the cooperation
with the
Russians?
That's another thing. That is unbelievable. So the president called it, what, an incredible offer of Vladimir Putin?
He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer.
Putin would allow Mueller's team to go interview the indicted Russians in Russia in exchange for the Russians getting their hands on U.S. citizens, including a former U.S. ambassador to Russia. Sarah Sanders was asked about it the next day, and she said, well, we're still looking at it and taking under advisement.
Should the U.S. interpreter be called in to testify before Congress?
I would think so. Why not? I mean, shouldn't all meetings the president have be on the record?
No, you can have off the record. You can have
private. It could be on the record, but private.
But you can also.
But you're meeting with the president, with the leader of another country and a foreign enemy.
Meetings. All presidents have done this, and I don't. But you, when they come out and say we've come to an agreement or we discussed these points, you at least have a bullet point, point by point of what they discussed. All of a sudden, he comes out with a point by point this morning of all this rugged manly things that he put his foot to the fire over. I would not do it under. Someone suggested last night. I was talking to an attorney friend, and it's actually very smart. I wouldn't go in front of Congress just because that testimony is going to be leaked like that. It will not be. You know, it's going to be leaked before the interpreter leaves the room after the hearing. But you know who can hear it and who is not a leaker is Mueller.
Interesting.
Adam Schiff and the House Intelligence Committee put forward a motion to require a subpoena, and they've named this woman, which is unfortunate.
That's unfortunate.
She's,
yes.
And it was rejected by down party lines. But it is interesting about the Mueller thing, because I did say with you, John, that I wonder if it does become a potential criminal investigation, whether the interpreter might be subject to subpoena that way. You know what we can do?
Kind of a marvel.
We could have the interpreter be questioned by Putin's interpreter. And then,
no, I imagine this sort of unending, this series of interpreters to infinity. But one of my worries was that maybe their interpreter isn't saying exactly what you want to Vladimir Putin. Or maybe we aren't getting exactly from our interpreter what we want. So you need an interpreter to sort of monitor the room for you. So you've got now another layer of interpreters. But what if those people are compromised? So then you need another layer of interpreters to monitor.
Wow. You know what I like is that they're saying, you know, well, Putin probably taped it. And I think they asked John Brennan, the former CIA director, you know, do you think the Russians have a tape of this? And he goes, I would imagine they do. I'm sure they do.
Wow.
And then they said, well, do you think there's a U.S. tape? He goes, oh, I don't know. Well, of course there's a U.S. tape. I mean, they're not the only ones who spy. I mean, if the Russians have a means to tape it, I'm sure that we have a tape of it, too.
Let me say this. I'm going to throw cold water on this whole conversation and move on to something else this way. This whole meeting between Putin and Trump really didn't matter, except for the damage that we did to our own Justice Department as a result. They're in a room for 2 hours. You know my theory on this, Steve. I also read today, really, they were negotiating for 90 minutes. But since you go through an interpreter, that means everything is repeated once. So in essence, 2 hours of talking is really 60 minutes of talking. Hi, how are you? Then she says it in Russian, then you hear it, and then it comes back. So you got to divide at least by two.
So how long does it take you to say, I'll give you the store?
So
do you want Alaska back?
So my question is, and then given the broken English and Russian that you would imagine everybody's going through, it's just such an inefficient way to communicate. So if you think that these two guys are really able to solve world problems or forge peace or make great progress, I think you're kidding yourselves.
Couldn't there just like be an app where when you say something, the other person hears what they're...
Or the babblefish, but you know, God knows what that
there is a thing where in real time you can hear the interpretation of somebody in your ear. Anyway, so
okay,
Trump was asked about what they discussed...
And it was a good meeting. We discussed so many different things, including nuclear, including war and peace, including economic, Syria, Ukraine. We discussed many, many things.
They talked about NATO. They talked about Israel. They talked about Bibi. They discussed proxy wars in Iran.
We discussed radical Islamic terror at great length, because they have the problem too. We discussed ISIS, and as you know, we've pretty much eradicated ISIS in the Middle East.
It was a long meeting. It was a long meeting, he said. And they discussed all of these things. They discussed essentially nothing. Nothing can get accomplished, if that's your agenda, in 60 minutes.
And now he wants to do it all over again. He announced he wants to have a second summit with Putin. No, this guy doubles down.
And on the news, they try to get people, they're like, we have a man here who once saw a bird in an airport. It's like, get the hell out of here. This is a horse loose in a hospital. And we're all like... It's not good.
There are worse things. But there are worse things.
Yes, but it's confusing. Yes. Because every day we just have to follow the horse. And some days it's like, the horse used the elevator.
Hopefully this week won't be another horse in a hospital week. Hopefully we'll all calm down. Cooler heads will prevail. And the democracy will prevail. It's 11:22. We've got news, traffic, and weather coming up in 8 minutes, and still more to come. The Vibe segment is going to ask you about your allegiance to a football team, and there's more music to hear on WGN. Also in a couple of minutes, a couple of notes from the story that is online in the Chicago Tribune by Dan Wiederer, the James Jordan murder. Michael Jordan's father's passing took place 25 years ago on, I think, Monday, and so the Trib looks back at it. And I read it, and it's positively fascinating. Long forgot about that, maybe, or sure haven't thought about that much since, and they revisit it, and it's amazing. Hey, you can make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10, then stick around for the latest in shopping and entertainment and events on See Chicago. That's at 10:30 on WGN-TV. So summer's here, right? And the time is right for dancing in the streets with the folks at Anderson's Candy Shop. What better signs of summer than county fairs and sidewalk sales? Next weekend, you can enjoy both. Downtown Barrington sale days will be going on all around Anderson's Candy Shops on Main Street in Barrington beginning Thursday, July 26th. You can catch a bargain and enjoy the treat that you deserve with a stop in between the bargain hunting at Anderson's for some amazing chocolates. You want more fun? Join Anderson's on Wednesday, July 25th through the 29th at the Lake County Fair in Grays Lake. Yep, those incredible mini donuts will be back along with Anderson's chocolates and ice cream and shakes and floats and cones and sundaes and free samples. Pack up the kids and meet the Andersons at the fair and enjoy all of the farm animals, meet the fair queen, cheer on the pig races, dog demonstrations, country music, demo derby, rodeo, and tons more. The time is right. Get off your couch and follow Andersons for fun, because nothing beats these treats. Remember, The Mincing Rascals is a free podcast decided by the journalists in Chicago as the best podcast in the city. And we do talk politics, among other things. But sometimes you say, I've just had too much politics. And so you need a dose of Eurelium Life 9000. Hit it, Griff.
Yesterday, I didn't feel too well. My heart was racing. I was dizzy. Everyone was talking about what the president said.
Every day, more and more Americans are suffering from politosis, an illness caused by too much political talk.
At first, I thought it was serveritis.
That's headaches due to Hillary Clinton.
Then I thought it was Bernie Sanderia.
That comes from stressing over socialism.
Or maybe it was just a good old case of Putin.
Upset stomach due to you-know-who.
But then my doctor said all these symptoms could only mean one thing. Politosis.
Symptoms of politosis include itchy eyes, runny nose, scaly skin, constipation, consternation, and erections that last over 4 hours.
I didn't have that.
Now's the time to give Eurelium Life 9000 a try.
I took two Eurelium Life 9000s in the morning, and by lunch I was calm, clean, and playing the piano. Which is weird because I don't know how to play the piano.
Ask your doctor if Eurelium Life 9000 is right for you. Don't take Eurelium if you have high blood pressure, low systolic pressure, or know anyone named Melvin.
Look at me. I'm walking in a park.
Read and follow label directions.
Want to talk politics now? I don't care. I just had a foot-long Eurelium Life 9000 hoagie.
Get Eurelium Life 9000 wherever Eurelium is sold. I don't know where you're going to get it. Online. Google Eurelium Life 9000. Joe, I don't know if you've had a chance to read that story that I was talking about by Dan Weider in the Chicago Tribune. It just moved, I think, yesterday. And printed out, it's 19 pages. Can you imagine that? The detail into which they went into the James Jordan, Michael Jordan's dad's murder. But I did read it. And just here's a couple of notes. If it whets your appetite at all, I think it's worth going back and reliving this story. It's, for no other reason, part of our history. But it talks about the two young men that were charged and convicted with Michael Jordan's father's death and about the circumstances under which the car was found and he was killed. I thought, particularly since he sort of teased at this at the beginning, that they would go into some of the conspiracy theories about the timing of Michael Jordan's father's passing and Michael Jordan leaving basketball and returning to basketball and some of his gambling debts and things like that. But they do not even line those dots up yet, let alone try and connect them. But he says it's been 25 years since James Jordan was found murdered beside a road in North Carolina, which in part prompted the Bulls star's retirement from basketball and sent two teenagers to prison for life. The two teenagers are Daniel Green and Larry Demery. And the story really is about those two young men, Daniel Green and Larry Demery, particularly Daniel Green, because Green is in jail and is going to be there, I think, forever. But he's trying to get out because he said, I didn't pull the trigger and I wasn't even there. Michael Jordan's dad died of one gunshot wound to the chest. One gunshot wound to the chest. So obviously one trigger man. And Green says it wasn't him. Early in the article, the author says there were so many odd circumstances about Jordan's death. Jordan's body was not discovered in his car, but turned up in a swamp in South Carolina 11 days after the murder. Jordan was cremated August 7th by a South Carolina coroner as a John Doe before his body had been identified. His 1992 Lexus was not discovered on the side of the road where he had purportedly slept, but was found abandoned in the woods near Fayetteville, North Carolina, 60 miles from where his body was found. And after it had been stripped, a total of 21 days passed before family members reported Jordan missing. His 57th birthday came and went on July 31st, 9 days after he had last been seen alive. Michael Jordan's father had been murdered, shot once in the chest. Less than 5 weeks earlier, Michael and James Jordan were on top of the world together in Phoenix, celebrating the Bulls' third consecutive NBA championship. In 1993, when Michael's gambling habits drew intense scrutiny, James defended his son and helped mollify Michael's temporary media boycott. But with Jordan killed by one .38 caliber bullet to the heart, the task of concluding who pulled the trigger was complicated from the start, and it remains so. And the story is mostly then about that, about how the murder did or did not go down. And I'll leave you just with this thought, because I had not known this, and you probably didn't either, but those kids steal the car, right? So they kill James Jordan, who was maybe taking a nap on the side of the road, not far from, a few hundred yards from a motel where he could have slept for $30 a night, but for some reason he pulls over and is taking a nap there on the side of the road, and then the kids come up, and they're going to rob him, maybe they're going to steal his car. Or maybe James Jordan happened to pull over on the scene of a drug deal, and everything went bad. But either way, he is shot and killed. The kids then take the car, and they start to use James Jordan's cell phone. They made 30-some phone calls, which made it very easy to sort of trace who they were calling and where they were. I mean, they weren't real smart about that, were they? But interestingly, the first call was to a 1-800-SEX number, and the second call, and I might have the orders of these flipped around, but the second call was to some other guy there in North Carolina. That call, the first person they spoke to, was the son of the sheriff. And there was no follow-up on the role that that son may or may not have played. They steal the car, and they call the son of the sheriff. Why? What was that all about? The son of the sheriff was a known cocaine dealer. And so what's the connection between all of these? The prosecution didn't seem to be very interested in. That has nothing to do with the conspiracies, nothing to do with Michael, nothing to do with Michael's dad. But it's just one of the sort of points that they remind you of in the telling of the story. I suspect it'll be in print in the Sunday Tribune tomorrow. It's online now, the James Jordan murder. What a story.
My pleasure.
This is WGN. I'm John Williams. This is our Vibe Score segment. We pick a few things in the news we haven't talked about, and we talk about them and score them for crying out loud. We get their vibe. All right, Griff, what have we got? Well, we start with a song.
Yeah, that's Girlpool. They're playing today at Pitchfork.
Wow, is that terrible?
No.
I'm going to give that on a scale of 1 to 100 a 17.
What's your problem? You don't like it. I like them a lot. I like that song, too. It's called Power Plant by Girlpool.
I can enjoy some soft pop, but I didn't know if that was like a kid's song, like for children or something.
You are outrageous. I'm going to come in there.
About to get slapped around by the producer. Joe, 1 to 100.
That's part of the job, right?
I give it 7.
Sometimes you got to slap around the
host. No, I think the audience would support you in this. Joe, 1 to 100. What do you give that kid song Griff was playing?
John, I'm with you. I'm giving it a 20. I thought we were getting back to the whole Partridge Family and talking about our childhood crushes.
Outrageous.
I wasn't sure.
Is that Susan Day on vocals? Because I couldn't tell.
Well, first of all, it would be fine if it was. That's a compliment. You're trying to disrespect this song and just failing miserably. Second of all, it's like a solid indie rock band. I don't know. Now I'm just thrown. I can't
picture what mood I'd have to be in to listen to that song.
Right. Where am I in my day when I go, I'm going to listen to that?
They are in town, so
They may be listening. Hey, ladies, I'm sorry.
Girlpool, get down here and teach them a lesson and play a song for me or for everyone else out there who I'm sure really enjoyed it. Eh, what are you going to do? You can't win them all. I give it a 87. I like them.
You guys see, I'll go next. McDonald's said if you buy their app for $1, we'll give you free French fries for a year.
They have an app, like, for your phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. McDonald's French fries, 1 to 100. 100, it's one of the great foods of Earth. 0, I don't like it.
We just did McDonald's hamburgers, like a month ago.
I could work the whole menu if you want. I think their shakes should be, if I said my last meal, I would put a McDonald's shake in there, too. Although, if that means I can't have a Wendy Frosty, you'll have to talk to me about it before I make a final decision. McDonald's fries, 1 to 100. A 92. They never disappoint. Joe, go.
See, when they're at their best, I get 92, but I've had a bad batch of McDonald's fries, and there's almost nothing more disappointing than receiving that.
Counting on them, and then they fail you.
Right, so I'll go 85 overall. I mean, yeah, for the most part, they get the job done, but every once in a while, you get a batch of cold potato cuts.
And you know, the bar is high this way. When you eat a McDonald's fry, you know this is going to cut your life by however many fries you just ate shorter. So if you're going to go there, it better be good, right? So you hate to be eating bad fries.
Right. I hate to go in there with a guilty conscience and then be like, see, you shouldn't have even done
this.
Don't
even get rewarded.
It's not even appealing, yeah.
Griffin, where are you on McDonald's fries?
What did you give Girlpool? I'll give it
13 for McDonald's fries.
No, they're good.
Haters going to hate. All right, so 1 to 100, you give McDonald's fries... Griffin.
I just said.
13? 17?
I'm standing on my principle. I actually like them, but my score at this moment...
is intractable. Okay. Yeah. Joe's got one for us. Joe, 1 to 100. What are we rating?
Yeah, so Danica Patrick was just recently the host on the ESPYs, and she did a pretty good job. I don't know. Did you hear her jab at J.R. Smith, John?
I didn't hear that.
So she made a jab at LeBron James. I forget what it was. And then it was a bad joke about his hair. And then she said, well, it's okay because LeBron made a joke on me last year, so now we're even. But J.R. Smith would say we're up by one. So I thought that was great.
That's good.
That was
fantastic. Good. That's good.
But apparently she just recently retracted her Bears fandom because she's obviously dating Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. So, I mean, just 0 to 100. Where do you guys stand on people changing fandoms of their teams?
Yeah. Well, particularly for that reason. This, by the way, threw Ro Khan off his rocker this week when they broke the news to him. Because he's a big Danica Patrick fan, he's a big Bears fan, and he liked the Danica Patrick, who's from the Chicago area. Everything lined up for him on this, and then she goes to the Packers for Aaron Rodgers. And by the way, how long is that going to last, Missy? I would just be careful before I forsake my team for a relationship that may not last.
Wow.
Yeah, so would we take her back? If that were to happen?
Well, I think that's a decision you and your family have to make.
Okay.
But I think the question is, if I'm not mistaken, how do you feel about changing team allegiances late in life, right?
Correct.
I like to be open to certain things. I've switched teams around a bit. I'm a huge White Sox fan now. You may have picked up.
Yeah, hang on a second.
So I'm okay with switching allegiances as you evolve. I just don't know that. I think if how can you be a Bears fan and then you have a
stop. You're done. Here's the deal. It's only annoying if you do it for a reason that it has to do with that team's success.
I love when Griffin lays down the law.
If it's like involves your personal life in some way, and you find yourself around people who are fans of another team, that's what happens. Like
when you
go through
Minnesota,
life, things change,
and you become a Vikings fan.
Exactly. Or if you're dating Aaron Rodgers, it's totally acceptable, and I respect it.
But if all of a sudden your team sucks, and then you go, well, now I'm not going to be a fan of them,
then it's annoying.
Then you're a bad fan.
So it just depends on how you get there. But you had the exact wrong take.
He's still upset about that.
Well, you're giving me choices.
Yeah, you know what? I actually love Power Pool Plant Girls, and I'm going to buy their CD right now. You're right. I forgot.
Well, Joe, where are you on realigning your allegiances? Do you get to change teams after the age of 19?
After the age? Ooh, I like the cutoff year. I after 19, okay. Well, no, because you do a lot of growing up in your 20s. So I would make the cutoff year around 25.
You're going to allow her this then?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, and I agree with Griff. It's an outside factor of the success of the previous team you were with. So it has nothing to do about how poorly the Bears have been for the past few years. It's strictly, I mean, you know, how is she going to eat dinner with Aaron Rodgers without, you know, extra clenching her knife and fork?
I don't know.
Being
I know
so upset.
I have some friends who are Democrats and Republicans. I have some friends who do and don't like the president, and they live in the same house. You can have him. Aaron should understand that as a lifelong Bears fan, you can't just unplug, right? So, yes, I love you. Let's not talk about Sunday's game.
You're right. Aaron Rodgers is in the wrong.
Mamma Mia 2, I Did It Again, or whatever this new movie is.
Here we go again.
1 to 100. What are we giving the new Mamma Mia?
I haven't seen it yet. I wanted to ask about another movie that's coming out. Unfriended Dark Web. It's the sequel to Unfriended. I loved Unfriended. This movie is being released in two different forms, so depending on what theater you go to, you will see a different ending. There are two different endings that people will see.
Wow.
What do you think of that idea?
I think that's brilliant. Joe, you like that or you don't like that idea?
I love that idea. That reminds me of the old Goosebumps books I used to read as a kid, where you got to choose, you know, which way the character would go. That's really cool.
I think they've doubled the ticket sales, or at least for some folks, they'll go, oh, did you see my version of it? Maybe it's even good marketing.
Maybe. Or it might frustrate people, too. I don't know. I'm interested in it, though.
Yeah, because if the movie matters to you, then you don't really have an agreement on what the ending of the movie was, right?
I feel like that's a huge way to get people to go to the theaters again.
Imagine if they did that, though, with other movies. Pick the famous movie.
That's the thing. It's the beginning of a trend that maybe could sour quickly. I like it for this one-off, but we'll see.
So at the end of Alien, you know, or at the end of Jaws, the shark wins. You know, the shark eats everybody. That could be an ending for Jaws, right?
Well, he did pretty well. He didn't win. I mean, he did die, but
he had a nice run there.
He was not the biggest loser of that movie, I don't think.
All right, that's just a few of the things. By the way, the new Mamma Mia movie, Griffin, I love it. I think it's a terrific movie, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it. So I'm giving the new Mamma Mia movie, as only I can, a great score, having not yet seen the film. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you to Don Kleppen, who did the news today for Doma T. Pongo, and Bob Kessler's in the anchor desk. He'll be joining us shortly. Griffin Filipich produced the show today. Thanks, Griff. I'm John Williams, and Joe Brand is in sports. Joe, just a quick update on that story we were talking about earlier. The president tweeted this morning that he's upset that the NFL has not stood with him on fining players who take a knee during the upcoming NFL season. His suggestion via tweet was that if you take a knee, you are kicked out of the game, and if you take a knee twice, you're kicked out of the season. The NFL has implemented, now I'm reading online from the Washington Post, and a couple of days ago, and now this sort of rings a bell, I'll just read their story in part. The NFL halted implementation of its new national anthem policy under that agreement with the Players Association. Both sides announced the deal Thursday night. The agreement keeps the grievance filed by the NFL Players Association over the anthem policy, which is ratified by the NFL, from moving forward. It keeps this from moving forward. Everything is on hold, said a person familiar with the situation. So the Players Association is protesting what the owners have decided, and that is if the players take a knee, there will be repercussions. That's my read on it, Joe. I presume you hear that the same way I do, right?
Yes, correct. Because the whole thing of it originally was this was the owners talking with the league, and they just made the decision and said it was a unanimous vote, that all the owners were in agreement that players have to stand. And then later it came out that they did not have a unanimous decision that way. So I think the players just want a fair shot here to have their voice be heard.
To be clear, this is part of the president's tweet. First time kneeling, out for the game. Second time kneeling, out for the season. No pay, exclamation point, said Donald Trump via Twitter today, because he's not real busy. Okay.